It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley. We're going to talk about Microsoft. Mary Jo was at a research event last week. What's hot and new for Microsoft? Also, some suggestions for how Microsoft could turn things around. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 303, recorded March 14th, 2013. MacGyver Madlock. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Rackspace, the open cloud company. At Rackspace, build what you want, where you want, and how you want, all backed by their world-renowned fanatical support. Try it today. Download the open cloud at rackspace.com/open. And by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Visit ShareFile.com. Click the radio microphone and enter Windows. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Windows3. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we talk about everything coming out of Redmond, Washington. And you know who just came out of Redmond, Washington? Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft.com. And what did you do? Did you tag Paul as he went in?
Yep, yes, I did.
It's like a cage match.
Yep.
Paul Thurrott's there now. Hey, Paul.
She softened them up.
This is Paul is, of course, the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. Mary Jo blogs at all about Microsoft.com for ZDNet. And were you there on the same purpose, but just at different times?
Nope. Totally different field trips.
Our purposes are at odds.
Oh, well, interesting. Well, I am not allowed to pry, right?
No, I think we can talk about it now, can't we? Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, last week I was there to go to the Microsoft Tech Fest, which is their research science fair kind of show.
Oh, fun.
And yeah, I thought it was going to be more fun than it was. I was a little disappointed because there were only certain exhibits open to the public. And when they brought you around, they really had you on lockdown. Like I had a PR person on one side and a Microsoft research person on the other side. And I could never get anywhere without either of them coming with me, including the bathroom.
It's like, what? No. That's like the Soviet Union.
Sort of kidding there, not really.
That's like, did they have somebody sitting outside your door at the hotel and at the end of the hall, too? Holy cow, did they bug your room?
That's great.
Yeah, I know. And it's fun because I love the research stuff. I really love those projects. And I get to talk to some of the researchers, which was fun. But I just felt a little too tied down and constrained.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it because you were on the research campus?
No, we weren't even. We were, I wish that was it.
Were you in a sanitized facility?
Down, Leo.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we were in the Executive Conference Center, which is the generic conference center they use for everything. Like they use that for Build and a lot of other meetings when people come to campus. So I don't really know what they thought we were going to find or where we were going to run off to. I'm not exactly sure what that was all about.
Do not talk to the scientists.
Great.
I'm a hologram.
Whatever you do, do not speak to the scientists. So, Paul, you're not there for that.
No. No, I'm interested to hear Mary Jo's opinion of that show because it corresponds with what I thought this past week. I was looking at the bloggers who went there and were writing about it, and I think you feel a certain obligation to write about stuff when you go there, but it's, you know, as you would for any show, and it just didn't seem... You know, it seemed like as she described, I guess, from the outside.
I guess that's that's an interesting point, is that you can't really go to something like that and not write about it, even if there's nothing to say.
Right. Right. It's the tough thing. So
they kind of put you in an awkward position.
You're like, oh, they got this project of some sort, and it's not ever going to really be a project or a product. It's like being at, you know, AT&T in the 1970s or Bell Labs or whatever.
Will you ever talk into your shoe phone? You will.
Yes, you will.
Yes, you will. So what was the coolest thing you saw, Mary Jo?
So, yeah, there was one really cool thing I saw, which was separate from Tech Fest. They let me go the next day to this thing called the Envisioning Center that used to be the Microsoft Home of the Future. And they also used to have like a Microsoft Office of the Future. And they've combined them together into one demo center now. So you go around and it's like a day in the life of somebody using technologies that they think are like 3 to 10 years away from being commercialized. That was cool.
So this is what our life will be like in 2023.
Was it all Android devices?
Yeah. Oh, yes. You are cold.
No, you know what it was all? This was kind of freaky, actually. It was all those giant perceptive pixel displays everywhere, like in your kitchen, it becoming your desktop, on walls in your office. And it was really interesting because everybody is always talking about the future being small screens, but Microsoft sees the future also as being these gigantic, big-ass, multi-touch displays.
The perceptive pixel is something Microsoft just recently bought, right?
They did.
Yep. And they're giant touch screens.
Yeah.
Yep.
And right now they're like between 55 and 82 inches, I think. And those are the typical sizes they come in. And they used to sell for $80,000 a piece. They're not like for the everyday person, but they envision the price really coming down on these.
You know, and I don't really want this in my living room. I'm sorry.
You know, it's cooler. It's cooler in person than it looks when you see like that picture.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine playing a game like, which I've done, Cut the Rope.
Fruit Ninja.
You know, Fruit Ninja. Yeah. On a screen like that. It's fun.
Yeah.
For 10 minutes. Yeah. Obviously it makes more sense in a office environment. You could picture it being used as a virtual whiteboard type thing.
Yeah.
And that makes perfect sense when you think about what Microsoft does best. So
is this what Bill Gates was using when he did his IAMA at Reddit?
Yeah.
Yeah. He said, I'm on an 80-inch display. It must have been this.
Frequently misquoted as a computer or tablet when, in fact, it's just a screen.
It's just a screen. But is there a computer on the other end?
There has to be. Yeah. It's connected to it. And by the way, it's not one of those cute little tablet convertible hybrid things. It's a giant tower computer.
See, I don't know if this looks like me in 2023. Of course, I would be in a wheelchair. But
I like the pen use, though.
Yeah.
The best part about it, see, what they're not showing you there is this guy's got the pen. He's touching it. If he were to bring up the virtual keyboard, which he would have to because there's no keyboard attached, it would be smaller than his hand on that display because the resolution is so high. The little display, it's really funny. If you picture like a postage stamp coming up at the bottom, that's what the keyboard looks like. You can obviously resize it, but the default view of it is like this teeny, teeny thing because that's how it scales.
I think that's a great idea. So you look really humiliated bending over.
Yeah, exactly. Where's the shift key?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But, you know, the other cool thing that was part of this Home of the Future, besides these giant displays, was they showed, like, where they see their version of Siri going in like, 3 to 10 years. And it's kind of more like a combination of Siri plus Google Now, right? It's like you say to your big table.
The problem here is in 3 to 10 years. That's kind of the problem.
But, like, it would be like,
overcoming my natural desire to make fun of this is hard, too.
Yeah, come on.
I'm sorry.
Will you ever talk to your computer? Someday you will.
Yes, yes.
No, I would.
It's the guy walking over the giant tower computer. Billy, tell me how to get to the store.
Will you ever be able to touch your own computer screen someday?
He'll be wheeling one of those two-wheeler things.
You will.
No, with like a battery backpack.
Come on. No, really. Like, say you could go up to your wall and say...
This is why they didn't invite me and Paul, by the way.
Go up to your wall and say, you know what? Show us all those design plans we just did last week. Okay, now let's get the ones from Bob, and they come up on your screen. Like, that's the thing they're showing. You know, like, your voice is tied in with natural language query capabilities, and on the back end, all the big data stuff. So you're being able to parse queries and refine queries with your voice. So it was cool. It was pretty cool.
It doesn't sound that different from what you'd be able to do with a Kinect and an Xbox 720, maybe, or even a 360.
Maybe. You can't say a whole lot to the Xbox.
I guess.
Yeah. It's like when you're, when I'm in the car sometimes, I'll hit the wrong button on the steering wheel and it will start loudly asking me to make a phone call or whatever. And I hate that. And most of my voice interactions with anything electronic are exasperated. Like, please go away. You know, cancel.
Oh, so
increasingly pleading for it to stop,
There was anyway, a famous Tech TV moment during the Fresh Gear show where we reviewed stuff, where Jim Latterback is talking to a lamp.
Not hard to imagine.
Like 15 times. He goes, Fresh Gear lamp on. Fresh Gear lamp on. It hasn't gotten much better, to be honest. I think
and
of the
he took his giant backpack and he stomped out of there.
I think of the TV show episodes where Matt LeBlanc is in his car and he presses the thing and says, call Bob. Calling your mom. No, no, cancel. Hello? Oh, hi, Mom. Just calling to say hi.
That's like the joke on The League where the guy is getting frustrated with his phone, always, you know, hanging up on him and not, you know, disconnecting him from his wife. And he says, you know what app this phone needs? It needs an app called Phone. You know? It's like the one thing it doesn't do right.
Let me just dial.
Yeah.
Well, now, okay. Mary Jo, we're boys. We're boys.
We've ridiculed how you spent your week.
We're done making fun of this all. How is Microsoft's track record on this? Because they've done this for years, where they've, you know, had videos about the kitchen of the future and stuff like that. Are they pretty accurate?
They're usually either a little too ambitious or a little too underambitious.
Right. Yep.
Well, right. Like they show you stuff that you're like, okay, like, I mean, how long have we been seeing videos where you could take your phone and put it down on a table and it would recognize you and populate your phone with all kinds of things, right?
Right.
Still isn't here, but I think I saw that video maybe 10 years ago.
Right.
They are very much like those, you know, California research firms from the 1970s that just couldn't productize things properly.
Xerox
you
PARC. Know,
yeah, Microsoft is a company that, you know, came out with the tablet PC. And then Apple did it better.
Right.
You know, they came out with the smartwatch, and now Apple reportedly is going to come out with smartwatches. You know, this notion that Mary Jo is just talking about, where you put a device on the table, it lights up, it understands it's you, and it does things that are specific to you, is something they've been demoing in that House of the Future for many years. Yeah. Yeah. And don't be surprised if Samsung or Apple or some other company does it right. And by right, I sort of mean Microsoft technically will do it right. They'll work with standards bodies and they'll, you know, like the DLNA type stuff. But, you know, someone's just going to do it. And this is the, I think, the fundamental problem for Microsoft these days. They have a hard time pushing from vision to popular product.
And I would say on the one hand, it's very difficult to predict the future. I mean, nobody does a good job of that. Remember the Apple...
The Knowledge Navigator.
Knowledge Navigator video. Yeah. Which, and in some ways came true, but some ways was light years. And this is very typical. Some of it's exactly right. Some of it's exactly wrong.
Hey, you can go back to Asimov and Arthur C. Clarke.
But here's the difference. These were speculative. This was speculative fiction. You're at the Microsoft Research Center, where presumably they're doing more than just
you know,
making up stuff. This is stuff they presumably are working on, or no?
Yeah, they are. And this is also where they want people who come in, who are customers and partners and press and other invited guests, to say, yeah, that looks really cool. That makes sense. Or I would never use that. Right. So it's kind of also a feedback mechanism, too. It's not just here's where we think the future's going and we don't care what you think. It's more they're helping them to refine kind of where they're taking things.
Yeah.
This is sort of a weird segue, but I wonder sometimes whether the age of Microsoft pushing hard to get those research projects into products has in some ways slowed down. It seemed like there was a period there in the early 2000s, especially, where they did a lot of this stuff. You know, ClearType was something that had come out of Microsoft Research and was considered a very big deal at the time. You know, subpixel rendering, and they pushed it into their Microsoft Reader product, which, you know, imploded very quickly, and obviously into Windows itself as well. You know, they did the smart displays, the spot watch, you know, the tablet PC and media center sort of software. All that stuff must have come out of various research projects. And I'm sure there are modern examples of these same things, but it seems like they're less so. You know, like it seems like it's slowed down.
Well, they acquired Kinect, right? That wasn't...
No, they built the Kinect.
They built that from scratch? Oh, I thought it was an Israeli company that they met.
I think it incorporates some of their technology, too. But, I actually think, Paul, almost the opposite of you. Like, I think what I see happening now is way more pressure inside Microsoft for research projects to be commoditized. And a lot of times, though, they're not exactly the projects they have in Microsoft Research, but they're... like pieces of something that then gets incorporated into a shipping product. And that's one of the things this whole Tech Fest research fair is about. So day one is just for the public and the press and all. But the other days in the week are for Microsoft Teams to come in and see the research and say, hey, I like that. I'd love to use that.
We could use that in office.
Right. Yeah.
So did they ever do a rundown of some of the ways that their research has been productized? Is there a
Seems like this is something they'd want to publicize. They've done it in blog posts occasionally. Like when Windows 8 came out, they had a blog post saying, here's some of the research projects that were part of Windows 8 that you might not know we started in Microsoft Research. So they do that occasionally. But yeah, they could do it more. They could sell that message way more, for sure.
It seems like they're one of the few high-tech companies doing billions and billions of dollars of R&D every year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that they would want there to be a direct correlation between that spending and some form of productization slash revenue.
I think when you get that big, though, you can have a $1 billion R&D budget and not always expect it.
You can, but, you know, when a decade goes by and several competitors are running roughshod over you, I mean, at some point you need to start showing results, too.
Yeah. Microsoft's huge R&D budget. I'm just trying to see if I can...
It's in the billions. Nine billion.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
and 90% of it, at least according to Forbes, is cloud focused. So not something you could really show off.
Yeah.
8.7 billion, which is 13.9% of their revenue. This was a year, 2 years ago, though, so it might be more or less now. But that's a significant percentage.
I'm sure it's way more than – I mean, Apple's R&D budget is going to be comparatively tiny, certainly as a percentage.
Right.
And then Google, I'm not sure. Google has enough kind of computer science-y math, you know, theoretical science-type stuff going on that I could sort of imagine their R&D budget being pretty high too. But those might be the only two companies that spend this kind of cash.
Yeah. I can go back to the 2011 article that I found and tell you who spent what.
Well, I bet IBM spends a lot, right?
Oracle was number two in this.
Really?
Yeah.
Yikes.
I don't know. They're researching sandwiches for Larry Ellison's boat.
Yeah, I was going to say. Microsoft's looking good by comparison. So,
Microsoft spends eight times as much on R&D. Again, this is all though a couple of years ago, so I don't. This is the chart from Business Insider from a few years ago.
Eight times as much as
Apple.
Apple, yeah. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I know that Apple is run very lean. I mean, look at Apple compared to Dell is fascinating because Dell is a company that basically just, they make things that other people make, right? There's no single unique product at Dell.
So why are they doing any R&D?
I know. Well, okay. That's a good question.
Let Microsoft do the work. Yeah, Microsoft.
You would think that HP and IBM would be more similar to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Cisco's up there. Google, of course. But Microsoft, as percentage of revenue and raw numbers, spends more than Google actually spends.
I knew Microsoft would be number one. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
That's fascinating, actually.
Google's a little maybe lower than I would have thought.
Yeah, you would think that Google, of all people, would be the ones doing the most research, more than even Apple.
The Apple thing is obviously the most interesting because Apple was literally run by the seat of its pants. Right. You know, that it was it's like the difference between going based on a single person's opinion and emotions versus $8.6 billion in research. It's really kind of crazy.
Yeah. It is amazing.
Yeah.
What was the worst thing you saw? It must have been something you saw that you thought, oh, nice.
But I was like,
I don't want to hurt any scientist's feelings, but.
No. I actually liked pretty much everything I saw.
That new dry water is going to be really great. I think.
Yes. Just add water.
Well, add water.
Typical Microsoft product.
Yeah. You know, I forgot the spot watch. When you said that, Paul, I thought, that's right. Before there was an iWatch or an imaginary iWatch.
I'm forgetting at least half a dozen things. I mean, that's the problem. There was a period of time there where they kind of came up with all these things that kind of came, went, and fizzled, and we forget about them until, next year Samsung or Apple or someone will release a watch and, a smart display and, all this stuff. I mean, it's interesting.
Somebody in the chat
tried a bunch of stuff.
Pointed out, and this is a good point, that it was Jeff in London said, If you count the 20% stuff at Google, that might be not monetarily, but in terms of time spent on R&D, a larger amount.
And that's obviously a unique Google thing that...
All employees, for those who don't know, all employees are expected to spend 20% of their time, one day a week, working on an outside project of their own.
Right.
And many things like Gmail came out of 20% products.
Right, right.
Projects.
I mean, beyond search, it's arguable that almost all of their other products came out of that.
Right.
You know,
right.
I bet.
Google Plus, Maps, Plus, Wave, everything.
Yep.
Yeah. Including those like rainbow colored segues out in the lobby. Those were so. I don't know. I'm sorry. I thought if I'm slamming Microsoft, I should have spread some. Equal...
Like I like spreading love is good.
Spreading That's some good. Equal love to, around the tech industry. Well, it really is. I think, and I don't think I'm alone on this. I think we are in a kind of a stagnant time in the tech industry where. We are looking for innovation and not seeing it. And most of the innovation you see at a place like CES is dopey or incremental.
Well, there's nowhere to go.
There's no. Right? But I know that we haven't invented everything that needs to be invented.
But that's not really the point. It's like we're in the age right after the Renaissance. You know, all the great paintings have been made. You know, so we can make little copies of them.
Yeah,
but
we kind of are. Do you think that's it, or is it just a temporary?
No, no. There'll always be more. But
how soon?
It's tougher because, you know, the Apple stuff that has been a big deal over the past several years was based around this notion of new device, new device, new device. And, of course, they've kind of saturated the market. And so we see evolution, evolution, evolution instead. And, you know, you can anticipate things like TVs and watches and stuff, but none of that stuff's very exciting. And it's going to be more along the lines of cloud computing services and integration. And I think we're just in a period of evolution. I mean, I think it's just natural that's the way it goes.
All right. I'll tell you what, before we get to the everybody wants to fix Microsoft portion of the show, which as you know, I look
forward to.
The
show is going to devolve into a self-help show. Except self will be helping will be Microsoft.
I think Steve Ballmer should visit Dr. Oz. I do. I really do. The show today brought to you by Rackspace.com. I'm really, I've been trying to get Rackspace to advertise on Twit for a long time because I'm a big fan. You know, Scoble works there. I don't know many friends that works there. Todd Clint, who was here last week. It is a really great company, renowned for its, what they call fanatical support. I mean, these guys really care about what they're doing. And everybody I've met who works at Rackspace just not only loves their job, loves their customers, and really loves to do it right. It's probably why they teamed with NASA not so long ago to create OpenStack. Rackspace co-founded OpenStack, the open cloud company, and they run the world's largest open cloud. That means you're not, it's kind of funny that NASA worked on this with them. Like, I don't know, maybe it's like a cloud around Mars or something. I don't know. It's just, you're not locked, what OpenStack means is you're not locked into a single provider. You have the freedom. Okay, now, it's interesting about Windows Weekly because they say that there are some cloud solutions that use proprietary technology, but I'm trying to think who they might be thinking of there, which could make it expensive and complicated to move your data if you ever want to leave. With OpenStack, you're not locked into a single provider. You can move those apps, the code, the websites between multiple OpenStack-based clouds, public or private, on-premise or hosted. Build what you want, where you want, how you want it. All backed by Rackspace world-renowned fanatical support. You can try it. You can download it for free. This is, I think, the first... No, we now have two advertisers that don't charge for their products. Absolutely free. Rackspace.com/open. Rackspace.com/open. Download, spin up, breakout. Try it today. Download the open cloud at Rackspace. Rackspace.com/open. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. Paul and Mary Jo notably silent during that commercial. We have nothing to say.
We're thinking all about the cloud.
The cloud. The puffy little cloud
to the
around.
Cloud.
By the way, this was, I think it was on this day that the great astronomer Herschel discovered Uranus. Just a little astronomical fact.
All right.
Okay. Sir William Herschel. So moving along, everybody wants to fix Microsoft. Sorry.
I really, really want to fix Microsoft.
Yes, it says that
right here. I
feel
very strongly about this.
So we talk about this periodically. I can remember going back many years talking with Dvorak saying, I got to split it into three companies. And what the three companies are changes all the time. You know, operating systems, enterprise, consumer. That's one.
Sure.
What do you think? What do you like? Oh, you're not talking about splitting it up, actually. You want to fix individual products.
Well, first we're trying to do the small fixes. Right?
Let's fix the products. Okay. So
and then if we can't.
I will grant you now, having used Windows 8, and by the way, I love this Acer S7. It's a beautiful bit of hardware. I'm really a fan. Windows 8, you know, if I used it as like a Windows 7, of course, it's better than Windows 7. I do agree with you on that. But there are some issues.
Yeah.
And I think you nailed it last week, Paul, when you said it's two operating systems, kind of
Frankenstein stitched together in some natural fashion that is an affront to God and man, I think is how I said it.
Yeah.
But
okay,
no, it's you know, this is one of those things where the strategy makes sense because it's the only way it can be successful. I.e., that if Microsoft had created Metro as a standalone system, you know, maybe called Surface OS or something, that it would have failed in the marketplace, just like all of their other non-Windows initiatives have basically failed. And that by putting it in Windows, they're guaranteeing several hundred million copies will be sold a year. And kicking and screaming or not, you know, people will eventually get used to it and hopefully will like it, obviously. And they'll move along and maybe they'll get those hybrid systems like the one you're using.
Yeah.
The problem is if you use a regular computer like Mary Jo uses or like I use, Windows 8 is not necessarily optimal. And you know, I've been using Windows 8 full-time since late 2011, and it's fine. I like it a lot.
I actually love the touch. In fact, it's to the point now where I don't want to use a non-touch computer
for
the shows.
Well, that's the issue. So, in other words, we're in this transitionary period. Right. So, there are 1.3 billion Windows users in the world, and none of them are using touch machines.
Right. That's a real
problem.
So,
we still have to address that market. And I think that's the problem. And when people come to me and they complain about Windows 8, it's almost always that crowd. I don't really hear from people who buy a tablet and say, this OS doesn't make any sense. I think those people are pretty happy with it for the most part.
Well, they probably rarely go to the desktop, right?
Hopefully not, yeah, because that experience is also terrible. But
yeah, see, it's funny because on the desktop's great on a computer.
Yes, yes.
But as soon as you go touch only, the touch targets are too small, and a lot of the things we're using on the desktop, it just doesn't. It's frustrating because you can't quite.
Yeah,
you're tapping it, and you miss.
When I go through this, I have this kind of a system where it's like you deal with it, you deal with it, you deal with it. It gets bad, and then I complain, and then I deal with it, and I deal with it, and then I complain. You know, and you can go back over time and. You know, I would have posted things over the past couple of years where it's like, you know, why doesn't Windows 8 look like this? Why doesn't it work like this? Why can't we have this? And, you know, there's always reasons and explanations and all that kind of
stuff. This is why we can't have good things, nice things.
Right.
Windows 8.
This is why we get ants, Leo.
But you know what's
interesting about all this? Is that something you say a lot of in your house? This is why we get ants. You left the pizza crust on the coffee table. Yeah, I'm used to that. Go ahead, Mary Jo.
Do you guys remember this? Like, as Windows 8 was being developed, and every week on the show we'd talk about it, I said almost every week, like, yeah, I'm just not going to – I don't think this is going to work on non-touch tablets. Remember, I said this, like, every week.
Oh, yeah. Called it. Yeah.
Every week.
You
called it. And now it's like everybody else is like, hey, guess what? This isn't really that good on non-touch tablets.
Wow.
I have a question.
Wow. Really?
Why didn't you warn us about this a long time ago?
Hey, Mary Jo, point the mic a little bit more towards you because it's aiming over across. You got to talk down the barrel of it. Talk down the barrel. See what I'm doing here? Look how I'm talking. Talking right into the microphone like that.
It.
See, when you do that, it sounds.
I just keep sliding.
Yeah.
Oh, how many times have I heard that? Yeah. Well, it's good now. It's good now.
That's good. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Sorry.
But, you know, I just went into Staples, the big Staples that's closest to where I live this week. And I saw they have a huge display right now of Windows 8 machines. Like, huge.
Oh, good. Finally.
You walk in the door and you're
the same
like,
thing, yeah.
But you go try to use these machines that are on display, and only one out of about 12 or 13 that I saw was a touch machine.
Really?
Oh,
still?
Yeah. I was surprised. I thought I just went up and started touching them. I'm like, none of these are touch machines.
I wonder if it's because Staples is an office supply store, and the feeling is that offices, you know, businesses will want regular PCs. But this is the problem right now. You know, I think that these digitizers and the hardware that you need for a touchscreen are still sort of expensive within the confines of, you know, PCs being a very commoditized business where it's hard to make a profit and so forth. And I think this is the thing we have to get over this year. But, man, a year is a long time. And a lot of perception occurs in that year about Windows 8 being a dog. And a lot of it is going to occur because people are going to go in and see what you just saw, you know, that they don't have these touch systems. And that's too bad.
It took a lot less to make people hate Windows Vista. And you won't find anybody who will defend Windows Vista, even though, truthfully, it wasn't that bad.
Right.
Paul was the only guy who liked it.
I know.
But it really wasn't as, I mean, this is
it wasn't
much,
as bad
this
as
is much more of a disconnect, I think.
Yep. Yeah.
And I would agree with you. When I use it on touch, it's great, except that.
Yeah. It is literally great for the thing that it's designed for. So touch, Metro works great.
Yeah.
Desktop, not so much. Yeah. Regular computer without touch, desktop works great. Metro, you know, not so much.
Dirac in our chat room says, do you think the Leap Motion will change things? That's that little thing you put in front of your trackpad and you kind of gesture.
No.
I think that's not going to...
We're going to tack on every possible way that you can interact with a computer and none of it's going to make a difference. Yeah. I still run into the problem where I'm typing and I'll swipe the stupid trackpad and even though I've disabled it, it starts doing gestures and I'm in a different app or... You know, the app switcher UI comes up or whatever. And that kind of stuff is just, those things kind of pile up, you know. It makes the whole experience a little frustrating.
Okay,
That's why we wanted to talk about Modern Mix, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're getting around to the fix. Yeah, let's get to the fix.
We're not just complaining this time, Leo.
No, we're not.
It was actually
an interesting product that Stardock brought out. So Stardock does a lot of different things. They do window blinds. They do a lot of games. And they did Start 8, which was the start button for Windows 8, which was very controversial. But this week, they introduced something they call Modern Mix, which actually lets you have Windows come back to Windows.
What?
Yeah.
So I shouldn't do it on my touch tablet.
No, I would say that this product should only be used on traditional non-touch PCs.
Okay.
Yeah. And big screens, preferably, right? Like it works the best on larger screens.
And there is that issue of if you have a 27-inch screen, should you really be touching it? I guess the Pixel Perfect would say yes.
Well, that's not really the point. It's more like you have a 27-inch screen, you probably aren't touching it because it's not a touch screen.
It's
too
far away,
Yeah.
Those Metro apps don't make sense. By and large, I mean, some of them might, but most of them don't make sense on such a screen. It's just too inefficient. And, you know, when you're interacting with a non-touch screen using a mouse and a keyboard, the app bar buttons are always in the far corners, and it's just a bizarre way to interact with a computer when you're using a traditional interface.
Oh, did we talk about this last week? This is what lets you run Metro apps in a windowed environment.
Yeah. Was this my pick last week?
Yeah. But now it's in beta. Is it free in beta? No,
you can try it for free.
$4.99, which is not so bad.
Yeah,
I'll take
that's,
it.
That's the final price too. So if you buy that, you get the final version. I think for that.
I've used Stardock stuff for years. I mean, going back probably to Windows 98, but I always felt like it's bogged things down just the slightest. I wasn't sure about reliability.
Well, I can tell you that this, you know, Stardate to me is like Mary Jo said, a little controversial. I think that. You know, the start screen stuff is not optimal necessarily on a non-touch display, but it's workable. I mean, I personally don't really have too much of an issue with it. It's a little jarring, you know, especially when you do Windows search. But the ability to run Metro apps in a window, to me, has transformed this into what it should have been all along. And literally a year and a half ago, whatever, I asked for exactly this capability. And it makes a really big difference because there are Metro apps I do like to run. And now I use them literally more often than I did before because I can run them side by side with my other applications.
So do you still use your Metro Start screen? Or
yeah, so I've been experimenting with doing it both ways. So on the laptop here that I'm using, I actually do have Start 8 installed as well. And that Start menu replacement or Start screen replacement works in a few different ways. And you can make it look like Windows 7, which I don't think you should do. But again, you know, some people really, really want that. You can have it look like Windows 8, but have it be over the desktop instead. So it's basically the Windows 8 start screen, but in kind of a window or kind of a menu, I guess, like the old menu, but bigger. And they have different styles and color schemes and all that kind of stuff. But to me, the Modern Mix thing is a big, big deal.
Hmm. Really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, because to me,
play
the
solitaire
reason
on the desktop.
Well, no, but...
No, but like if you're somebody like me who, like the reason I didn't want to have, when you guys sent me this awesome big screen Optiplex, I didn't want to have Windows 8 on it is because I don't want to run only one or two apps at a time, right?
That full screen app run, thing is bad, yeah. Yep.
All my apps, you know.
Well, if you run regular apps, I mean regular desktop apps, you're used to working a certain way and you get notifications, you know, maybe in the icon on the taskbar and so forth. And when you're running full screen, those things don't happen. And so we really do live in a mixed environment now, and it makes sense for these things to be available in one place. And that's what this enables.
You know, everybody's moving that way. Apple's done the same thing too, you know.
Yeah.
You
think this is an interim fix or is...
No, I don't think Microsoft is ever going to enable this capability.
They're never going to do this.
Again, 1.3 billion people have regular computers, and if whatever percentage of those want to or have upgraded to Windows 8, I think this is an excellent way to make that transition. You know, maybe your next computer is a touch computer. Maybe it's some crazy hybrid transforming, yoga, bending, splitting, whatever thing. But in the meantime, we have... you know, work to do, and we have lives to get on with, and we have regular computers that are going to last for years and years, and $5 is not a lot of money to spend to make that work.
All right. So that's one way to fix Microsoft Windows 8. What's another way to fix Microsoft? How about Windows Phone? Anything wrong with that?
No.
I can tell you, after using the BlackBerry Z10 for about 3 seconds, I'm about to throw this thing out the window.
Sure.
So... you got that going for you. It's not the worst phone on the market.
No, I love my Windows phone.
I think they're really good. I don't think there's anything wrong with Windows phone.
No, but the fix we were talking about when Paul and I were going back and forth about Windows phone and like how would that be fixed was very much inspired by something that Google did this week, which was Andy Rubin's out as the head of Android. Android's now part of the Chrome OS group. And, you know, this has been rumored to be happening at Microsoft for years, right? Like, how long have we been saying Steven Sanofsky was going to end up heading up both Windows and Windows Phone? Yeah. I think like 3 years, four years, maybe.
Sure.
It still
and look
has
how well
not
that
happened.
Worked out.
I know. Right.
well, again, Microsoft can never implement.
right.
Yeah, it never happened.
Right.
And it still hasn't happened. Windows Phone.
Chrome OS and Chrome are very different from Android. I don't know if I don't really understand this.
I also am not positive we're getting this mix right. I would say that they're part of the same team and the same man is running both projects, but there's an assumption that you know, Android becomes part of Chrome, that it's like something that runs in Chrome or something.
No.
I think the opposite is far more likely.
Yeah.
That Chrome's just an app. It could run within Android. And Android OS is a far more capable operating system than Chrome OS.
That's what I think. But if in that case, you keep the Android guy and you boot the Chrome guy.
Or you turn him into a Chrome Android guy. Have you seen that photograph?
You know, personally, and we chewed this kind of endlessly on Twig yesterday. And I think I came to the conclusion, I believe that, in fact, it really has nothing to do with anything that we're thinking, that Andy Rubin really just wanted to move on, and they found something more. He's entrepreneurial. He's a startup guy. He's been 10 years on this project. I think he's going to work on robots, because that's his big passion. Seriously, he's totally into robots. That's why the Android is a robot.
It makes sense that Skynet would be developed by Google as well.
Yeah.
So the
machines took over. And who's going to help it? Andy Rubin. Meanwhile, Sundar Pichai, who runs Chrome OS and Chrome, he's, you know, a nice, trustworthy kind of mainstream kind of guy. He may not be a permanent head of Android. You know, Android is less and less, believe it or not, with all its success, it's less important for Google because they've lost control of it. It's been forked.
Sure.
And now I thought, though, Eric Schmidt and other people have gone on record saying the plan at some point is to have one OS, isn't it? Like, I mean, that the OS that's going to be on Chromebooks and the OS on phones is one thing, no?
Well, I don't know. You know, I ordered the Pixel finally, and I'll have it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I'm made of money.
And, yes, right.
And like that Geico commercial just flies off.
They will make a fine bidet someday, Leo.
Solid unibody construction. Yep. No, but one of the reasons I was willing to get it is because I can run Android and Linux on it, real operating systems.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have a point there, but I don't think that's what they're selling with Chrome OS. They're selling a super secure, basic, simple operating system. And I, Android is not that. Android's the opposite of that.
Android is fairly complex.
Not secure. It's very complex.
Okay. So, we'll see. I'm very curious to see. Google I.O. this year is going to be very interesting.
Oh, yeah. We're going. In fact, we'll do our show live from Google I.O. on, May 15th.
But the point that Mary Jo has
not
here
this
with
show.
Us.
By the way,
no, the show.
I wouldn't do that. To you.
With merging the teams is a valid one because Google, in their own strategy, is obviously hemorrhaging services that don't make sense, and they're trying to consolidate things down. But outside of that, I would just say these types of products are merging into one. It's not any bit of a stretch to say a smartphone and a tablet are the same thing, and increasingly these computer devices are also the same thing.
You know perfectly well how to fix Windows Phone 8. Ship it 2 years earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really, in my opinion...
I can't go back in time and do that.
It's the only thing wrong with it. It just came out too late. Had it come out...
It's fascinating to me that you just said that, because I was talking to a couple of friends from Microsoft on this trip, and they kind of said the same thing, that, you know, there's a point in time where it doesn't matter how good something
exactly.
is if you're so late.
Exactly.
And that Windows 8 may suffer from that, you know, with tablets, Windows Phone certainly.
I've been doing this long enough now. I'm an old man. I remember BOS, much better operating system.
Yeah, I love BOS.
But Windows and Mac were well established. There were no apps. It was no need for it. It wasn't that it wasn't better. It was better. And I could think of dozens of examples.
Obviously, Apple's decision to buy Next was the right one in retrospect.
In retrospect,
at the time... I was really disappointed that iOS had nothing to do with Steve Jobs and Next Step. It had everything to do with the fact that I just thought it was such a cool
operating system. It was great. And from Apple's point of view, bringing back Steve Jobs was preferable to bringing back Jean-Louis Gasset. I mean, there were lots of reasons why they did it that were not technical.
Yep.
But that's another topic.
Yeah.
The truth is, the only thing, in my opinion, wrong with Windows Phone 8 is that it's a little too late.
And
I don't think merging it with Windows 8
solves anything.
Yeah. It doesn't make it a better product.
It's not such a runaway success. I'm not sure why you think that.
I know.
But
the one thing we know they are doing, right, is with Blue even before Blue, they're trying to make the developer platform and the app model more common between the two. That's why you saw them make the core of Windows Phone Windows NT, right, instead of Windows CE. So Microsoft's kind of moving that way, not just on the UI end, but also in the guts of the products to make them more alike. So that the idea, I think, is, hey, we don't have that many Windows 8 apps. We don't have that many Windows Phone apps. What if we could take two small piles of apps and bring them together?
Make one big pile of app.
One big pile of apps, yeah.
I know there's a pony in there somewhere.
Oh, boy. It's a winning strategy.
Yeah.
You see, though, it's really challenging. It's very challenging. This is not easy stuff.
Yeah.
And the best, I think that some of the smartest people in the world are people working in the technology industry trying to figure this stuff out.
Yep.
And because they're, you know, the smartest people were drawn to this because it was changing things. And that doesn't mean it's an easy solution.
Yep. Yeah, and Microsoft's strategy, again, is sound. I mean, it was the right thing to do. It was actually pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
It hasn't translated into sales or anything. It doesn't change the fact that had they done the reverse, had they done the thing that I might have personally preferred, it would have gone even worse, you know, that they would have accelerated their decline.
Yeah. Okay,
so don't listen to us.
We fixed Windows 8. We've tried to fix Windows Phone. Certainly that would be a good thing to do. I don't think it'd be a bad thing to do to merge the two.
There's a future for phone at Microsoft, and this sounds heretical maybe, and I think I brought this up before, but there's no reason that Microsoft can't skin Android as well. And piggyback on the existing system has an amazing app library, put their apps and services on there.
Have a Microsoft store just as Amazon does for Android and vet the stuff, make sure it's secure.
Yep.
There's that opportunity there. You know, I look at the HTC One, the next HTC phone, and they've skinned it. They've skinned Android to look like Windows Phone in some ways.
Have they really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
So
why not?
Why not? No,
yeah.
I like that.
No, because if the issue is apps,
that
everything else
that.
That's special about Windows Phone can be on that system. You know, if the only issue is apps, if that's really the reason no one is buying this thing, that solves that problem immediately.
Yeah.
No, they're never going to do what I just said.
That's kind of a Hail Mary.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily recommending. I'm just saying that there's a, you know, there is an alternative.
Yeah. Okay, RT. Let's talk about RT. I don't know. I think RT is...
the Titanic?
Yeah. That's one way to put it. Although they are building a new Titanic. I don't know who's going to say. Did you see that?
No.
And that's incredible.
They're building a duplicate Titanic.
They should fly the new Hindenburg over it on its first
mission. That's crazy. Who's going to buy tickets? It's going to be daredevils. Evil Knievel will buy a suite, but I don't know who else.
You know, lightning doesn't strike twice in the same place. I mean.
Yeah, and it's an unsinkable ship. And what are the chances it would run into an iceberg?
And there are no modern stories about people having problems on big boats these days.
Right. We've really fixed that problem, haven't we? Yeah. They're building a new Titanic. The Titanic 2. They didn't even change the name.
The Titanic 2? Are they going to call it Electric Boogaloo? What, are you kidding me? Titanic 2, The Quickening?
It's I know. I mean, they've got a deal. It could be they have a deal with James Cameron to make a sequel. I don't know.
So it's actually going to look like the old boat?
It's going to look exactly like the old boat. And, of course, notice this when ABC News is telling the story. Of course, they show clips from all the Titanic movies of the boat sinking. That's got to help ticket sales.
Are they actually going to have enough rescue boats this time? Or
is it going to be that? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much of a replica it's going to be. They
you have
say
exactly one chance to ride an exact replica. you might want to get in early on this one.
Oh, boy.
That's crazy.
So... anything can happen. Maybe the surface RT.
Funny. RT is a lot like the Titanic, too, because it looks a lot like Windows.
But it's not.
I disagree.
Okay.
I like my Surface RT.
You like it.
I still like it.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm the party one here.
I feel bad because I broke mine, so I'll never know how good it was.
Yeah.
I'm so sad about that.
Twitter app, Leo.
Oh, the Twitter app. The Twitter app is here. Well, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, they are. But no, Dr. Pizza had a good article recently entitled Windows RT is a Lemon. Here's how Microsoft can make some lemonade.
Ah.
And you know, one of the things he talked about is one of the things I really think could change the perception of Windows RT and Surface RT, which is put Outlook on there, real Outlook, right? Maybe real InfoPath and maybe real Publisher. Like, put the rest of the Office suite on there.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. There. I mean, I think it was really smart to put Office on there to begin with.
You know, better still would be actual Metro versions of the Office apps, you know, not just OneNote and Link, but, you know, Word, Excel,
PowerPoint.
That would
take writing something.
Yeah, you know, it actually requires work. I get that. Yes. But they have to be working on this. They have to be.
They are. For sure they are. They are.
That's attractive. Get rid of desktop. RT2. The Quickening. Get rid of...
Electric Boogaloo.
Get rid of desktop, but still contain Office, but Metro and the full Office Metro.
Right. And maybe
that's
you don't
kind
put
of
it,
compelling. I don't mind
right,
that.
Maybe you don't put it all. No. You know what they could do? They could say, if you buy Office 365 Home Premium, now you can also download these apps onto your Surface onto RT, which you cannot do right now, right?
Yeah.
Because there aren't ARM versions of anything except for Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote.
That's an excellent
idea. But you know
idea,
those things exist. I'm positive Outlook RT exists.
Absolutely.
I know it's there.
Definitely, yeah.
Now, I would buy that.
Right.
Yep.
I think business users would buy it because it would give them a really locked down, cheap alternative.
Isn't that kind of, though, what Windows 8.5 would be?
Yeah.
Really?
Kind.
Isn't it? I mean, we
if there were such a thing, Leo.
Right.
I mean, don't we want to phase out the desktop in general?
I think so.
And so a first step would be an RT without desktop, but with full Office.
Right.
Metro style. Right.
To show people that Metro apps don't just have to be toys, right? Because if you look what's in the store now, most things are very lightweight, small, fun things, games. They're kind of toy apps for the most part.
Well, Leo is running an app right now that is contrary to that, right? Maybe the One app, which is the OneNote
app. Is great. True. I love it.
No, those,
that's a great example.
Those apps... Right. Those are examples of like here, you can have real apps on
that's
this
an
thing.
Office. That's a full Office app, you know?
Yep.
And
yep.
On the touchscreen, you get that craziness where like if you just touch a part of the screen there, you get that little a little circular menu that comes up.
Yeah. I think that's really cool.
Which is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Let's tap that.
This all
guy.
Makes sense. Yeah. In fact, it's funny because this is also in. Is this not in the non? It's in the desktop version.
No, it's just in.
Oh, it's just in the RT. Yeah.
This is unique to this. Yeah.
There's a reason why Microsoft calls it the modern UI. It's not old school UI. It's not our former UI.
No.
It's the future, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I like that. I think that, you know, God damn it, now I have to fix my RT.
Put it in the shop. Come on.
Yeah, but, you know,
they'll probably fix it for free.
I'm thinking they will. I mean, what how many?
No, I'm serious. They can't possibly be out of warranty. They've only been selling them since
October. Well, I dropped it. It cracked. I mean, it's my error.
Oh, I see. So I would still bring it to them to see what they do.
I should. If I could find a Microsoft store, I would do that.
You at least have some Microsoft stores in California.
Why is it more Microsoft stores part of this list?
Presumably they're working on that.
Right.
Those are success. Are they a success, would you say, the Microsoft stores?
I think they're really important. They need to have these things.
They need them.
And because, you know, one of the things that's going to happen in the future is these big box stores are going to go away or at least be less common.
Right.
And you need a place where you can go and actually see these devices. I really, really think these are important.
That's why Apple did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't expect to make millions of dollars per square foot. They did it because they needed a showroom.
Apple's need to make stores was even greater at the time because they didn't have the outlet, even though those outlets existed for other companies.
That's right.
But eventually, maybe I've got this reversed. I mean, eventually those outlets are going to disappear for everybody.
Meanwhile, I got to find a Microsoft store so I can. I think I have to drive to San Francisco.
There's going to be one in California somewhere.
Yes, of course there is.
There are a few.
I think there's one in San Francisco. I have to drive an hour to bring it there on the possibility that they'll look at the crack and say, "Oh, that's our fault."
Driving an hour to go to a Microsoft store is one of the greatest days you're going to ever have.
Did I mention it's an hour back? They closed the one in San Francisco. They closed the one in San Francisco.
Oh, but they're going to open a permanent.
That was a pop up.
Yeah, you're going to get a permanent store.
Whatever pops up must come down.
Yeah.
Don't get me talking about no New York store again.
There's still no New York store? They closed
Are there a lot of people there? It seems like they would want a store.
There's not that many people here.
Do you have to go to Long Island?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You got to add that to the list. Item 5. A Manhattan Microsoft store.
New York City.
Yeah,
but I do love your idea, Mary Jo. And Mary Jo is standing in defense of Surface RT, and I think you're exactly right. I wonder how are the OEM RT devices selling? Are they selling at all? There are not many of them.
Leo, do you have one of those radio station boards where they have like cricket sounds, you know, things like that? Because that's how it is.
Yeah, I can probably find crickets.
We don't really know how they're selling, but we don't think they're selling too well. We also don't think the Surface RTs have sold very well.
Right.
Oh, really?
No. Surface Pro, yes.
We're here in the Microsoft store.
It's like a Surface RT with sleep apnea.
It's a little quiet right now. All right. Finally. I noticed, by the way, there's no Fire Steve Ballmer on this list. Kudos to you for not taking easy way out.
Seriously, if there's anyone on Earth who could actually come up with a viable replacement for Steve Ballmer, along with explanations about why he could possibly magically do a better job, I'd love to hear about this person.
Right.
I really don't think that person exists.
You don't think any of this is Steve's fault?
No, actually, I really don't, personally. But
all right.
Go ahead, Mary Jo. I'm sorry.
I think introducing the mobile, the phones late is a Ballmer problem.
You do? You would blame him for that?
I would. Because he kept saying, iPhone, right? And just let Windows Mobile kind of drag on and on and on. And then suddenly get the reset.
The iPhone comments I can't discredit him for because, you know, one that's taken wildly out of context is, you know, when the iPhone was first released, it was $600. And it was crazy expensive compared to everything else.
Not only for a month or two. It wasn't that
I know, but the quote they keep bringing up from Steve Ballmer supposedly being clueless about the iPhone was from that 1 month period. And he was right. And so, and by the way, Apple changed the pricing. So I guess he was right about that.
Yep.
But Mary Jo is right. And one of the most frustrating series of meetings I've ever had with Microsoft over the years, it was the Windows Mobile people, and how absolutely clueless they were about where the market was going. And they'd actually said to me in one meeting, you know, the success of the iPhone validates their theory that consumers would embrace multi-touch devices.
And it's one of, we were right.
No, I'm serious. And it was, I'll never forget this meeting. And I was typing on my phone, on my computer, and I stopped typing. And I looked up at this person, and I said, do you actually hear the words that come out of your mouth? I mean, that was insane, you know?
Yeah.
Those people were absolutely clueless. And I still hear defenses for Windows Mobile to this day, though. People say, well, you know, Windows Mobile was designed to take on Palm, and we beat Palm, you know? That's great. That's great. We beat Britain in the War of 1812, but that was a long time ago, and things have moved on since then. So maybe we need to move up to the modern day. Yeah, Windows Mobile was, I guess you could throw that at Steve Ballmer's feature. But regardless of Steve Ballmer, the fix I like the most here, and it's funny, it's awful in a way, because I follow Microsoft, write about Microsoft. I keep coming back to this again and again over 20 years of watching this company. I keep coming back to this notion that they need to be broken up. And the thing that's interesting about that is that the reasons I would give today have nothing to do with the reasons I would have given, say, in the wake of the Microsoft antitrust trial in the United States, where at the time, it's comical today. I was talking to those guys from Microsoft about this. I happened to catch the movie Antitrust on TV recently, and it's really funny to think how scared we were of Microsoft. The movie Antitrust is a very thinly veiled reference to Microsoft. It's Bill Gates as a murderer. You know, it's crazy like how scared we were of those people. There's a Steve Ballmer character, a bald guy, looks just like Steve Ballmer. They're today are obviously a giant panda bear compared to what they were in, you know, 1999 or whatever. But it's very clear to me that Microsoft makes one type of product really well, and those are enterprise products, business products, productivity products, and that the consumer stuff, not so much. And I think that those should be the companies. I think that Microsoft should continue as a company that's, by the way, basically just as big as it is now, that is the enterprise company, the corporate company, and that they should have a consumer company spinoff called Xbox, which takes obviously the Xbox, their entertainment stuff, their consumer services, you know, Xbox Music and video and all that kind of stuff. Much smaller company, but one where the smaller market that is served by those products actually makes sense and is a viable business. You know, that Mary Jo talks about where are Microsoft's next $1 billion businesses. And it's kind of a scary list of possibilities. It's not a very good list. And I don't mean that Mary Jo created, but that the possibilities that they have.
It's a terrible article, Mary Jo.
No, I mean, they don't really have that many great choices. The Xbox, it would be a great smaller business. It would be a great smaller business. But as part of Microsoft, it almost doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, does anyone really believe that the next Xbox is going to be some kind of living room force when you can buy $49 to $99 Roku devices and WD devices and Apple TVs and all these other little things? This is not a major business.
Right. So we're talking about these billion-dollar businesses. So Microsoft always talks about this. They say, you know, the ideal is to have businesses in the company that grow to $1 billion. And they have a whole list of which businesses have grown to that point. And yep. If you look at the list of ones that from the past that are already there, it's like Windows, Office, SharePoint, which is $2 billion already. The CRM products, System Center, it's all their enterprise products. And Xbox is on there. I just found a list this week.
Xbox is like a negative something billion business if you actually factor in how much.
Yeah, I know, right? But I found this list of businesses they're incubating that they think could be the next billion-dollar businesses. And listen what's on this list, because you'll not be surprised if you realize Microsoft's an enterprise company. Windows Azure is on the list as the next possible billion. Mm-hmm. Windows Intune, Bing Maps, Store Simple, which is a cloud storage appliance. Perceptive Pixel are those big touchscreen displays that we talked about.
Not a billion-dollar business, sorry.
Not yet.
Never.
Not yet. And then Parallel Data Warehouse, which is their giant database warehousing appliance. Okay.
But I heard the consumer version of that's really exciting.
It's called Windows Home Server, Paul.
For iPhone. Yeah.
But this is where Microsoft makes their money, everybody. Like right, people keep saying Xbox, company. Right? Yeah. Oh, no, it's not.
You know, never made money.
Like it's obvious, but you know, it's Microsoft that doesn't understand that this is not the case. That Microsoft is the enterprise company. Get rid of Xbox.
Mm.
Just get rid of Xbox and make that the consumer thing. Yeah. It's so simple.
Although if they do this, like if I mean, I don't think they ever would do this because they maintain that they their consumer that products
they loved, the enterprise. They love having a brand that people care about.
They do. But if they ever did, what would make money in the consumer company? Like, would they have to take some of SharePoint's $2 billion and like give them to the Xbox company?
No, I think the Xbox, the reason that this would work, and it's kind of a classic spinoff when you think about it, the R&D has already gone into it. Right. In other words, they're free of the debt of the past because now it's starting fresh as a new company. They can address the market that is 50 to 80 million active users of games, because ultimately, that living room stuff that they're doing is very attractive to people that want the Xbox because they're going to play video games. But a big kind of computery thing that sits in the living room that lets you get on Netflix is not very attractive when you can get Netflix through a TV, through your iPad, through every single cheap device on Earth. I mean, there's no reason to have the overhead of such a device to get to the things that you want. You know, the Xbox business, the hardware business, the console business is games. It's just games. Yeah. The other stuff is a sideshow.
Okay. Do you want to talk about breaking them up, or you kind of did? That was kind of it. Yeah. Enterprise and consumer, and then you throw away the consumer.
And by the way,
how to make the perfect martini.
This is a wrap.
Two parts gin, one part vermouth, and you throw away the vermouth.
Right.
Yeah.
Stop pretending they want this, the sugary green drink.
It costs them a lot of money to maintain Xbox, and I still don't know if they made any money on it.
I'm positive they have not.
Search, big hole they're throwing money into.
It's an investment, Leo.
Let's take a break. I think we just fixed Microsoft, and God, I just hope that they're listening in on the phone line. In fact, Paul, I know they are, so that's the good news. You're staying.
I'm not sure they're not happy about it. I can tell you that.
Our show today brought to you by ShareFile from Citrix. A great solution. I use ShareFile myself all the time to share files. It makes sense, right? With the I do audio files for radio stations. The other day, a show asked me to make a video clip, so I recorded the clip and then I put it on a ShareFile so they could download it. I met somebody at a restaurant. We were talking about cameras. Her little son was there, very adorable boy. I took some pictures. She said, "Oh, I want those pictures." I said, "No problem. I can get them to you." ShareFile.com. It really is great. It is a business solution designed by business for business. Let me show you my ShareFile account, because one of the things I love about it is it's branded. It doesn't look like a ShareFile site. It looks like a Twit site. I've got my Twit logo on it. If I want to share files with somebody, I have an Outlook plugin that I can just send it just like email. But it's better than email. This is what the problem is. Email is insecure. Email, you can't send these big files that people want these days. In fact, they're still in email inboxes, quite a few of them. The 10 megabytes will be bounced. Anything more. Those pictures I took, each one of them was 13 megabytes, 250 megabytes total. No problem with ShareFile. I sent her a link. She clicked the link, downloaded the files. You can password protect the files. You can even control how many times they can be downloaded by whom, for how long. You really have control of all of this. You can send files of almost any size. Highest degree of security. I'll tell you how secure. It's HIPAA compliant. So if you're in the medical business, the regulations for patient privacy are very onerous, but they're satisfied by ShareFile. In fact, ShareFile satisfies requirements of a great many industries. That's why when you go to ShareFile.com and you click the Try It Free button and use our promo code Windows, one of the first things they're going to ask you is, what industry would you like to customize your ShareFile for? And pick the industry. You don't have to, of course, but if you pick the industry, it's a great idea because then you can see how it can help you. Anything from accounting, advertising, architecture, biotech, education, energy. I mean, I can go on and on. There's literally dozens of industries supported by ShareFile. So enter the name Windows as your offer code, and just so that Paul gets credit, Paul and Mary Jo get credit. And let's say we're in the legal profession. We'll set up our account. It'll set it up just for, the kind of work you do, so it's great. You're just going to love ShareFile. It is a fantastic way to share files. 30 days free right now, ShareFile.com. Use the offer code Windows. Perhaps you have tried other solutions, even some consumer-grade solutions. This is the pro solution that gives you total control, and it's completely customized to fit your brand and your business. ShareFile.com. Give it a try today, free. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, we're talking about Windows. I don't have my Windows RT. Maybe Mary Jo can do this because they've changed the Flash blacklist, and we were on the blacklist. We were not whitelisted. It's not a blacklist. It's a whitelist, isn't it? Is that how it works, Paul?
It is a...
What color is the list?
Puce.
So it's hard keeping this straight.
It's a white list, which means that on a Windows RT, I guess this is true on Metro. Is this true on Metro Windows 8?
Leo, it's trying to figure out the matrix of where this is true is unbelievable. But
not all Flash sites worked.
No, it really is unbelievable. This goes back almost 3 years. Dean Hamachevich, I never get his last name correct. I'm sorry, Dean. Wrote a blog post talking about how HTML5 video was the future.
It is.
And basically said, we understand that people need Flash, but HTML5 is the future.
I think they were trying to jumpstart
Flash sites from, to use HTML5.
Right. As was Apple.
Clearly, that never really happened. So one of the deals with Windows RT in particular is that it has certain promises that it makes about the reliability, the performance, and the stability, of the system, that it will be consistent. And Flash is something that doesn't work within the confines of those goals. And so they worked with Adobe to put a subset of some version, recent version of Flash into the browser in both Windows 8 and Windows RT, where there was a whitelist of sites that were acceptable, were known to work within the confines of this new system.
Right.
And it impacts the Metro version of the browser in both systems, and the desktop version of the browser in Windows RT, because you can't install plugins, right? So you can't go on Windows RT and install the Flash plugin and get the full Flash. That's why it works that way.
Right.
And so now I guess time has gone by, and I don't think anything has actually changed. They seem to indicate that, it's like the web community gets it, and now the Flash sites are all, written better or something. I think basically what happened was a lot of people complained.
Yeah, because Flash realized, is no less insecure.
Yeah, and I think that not having full Flash was maybe one of the many things about Windows RT that was on a list of reasons why people weren't buying them. So they basically just completely reversed course on this. It's really kind of fascinating. It's completely – it is literally the opposite of the way it was.
So my question to you, maybe Mary Jo, are you sitting in front of your RT?
No, I'm not, but I can get it.
Because we don't know. Maybe some – the chat room will know.
I know we were. It was blacklisted before, right? Like
it was not whitelisted.
It was not whitelisted.
Well, okay. So in Windows 8, though, I'm running Windows 8. I should be able to.
Yeah, that's
see this.
But you can install Flash on Windows 8, so that's not an
issue. But not in the Metro version, right? So this impacts the Metro version. So if I were to load this browser,
I could do that.
I can now run in a window, by the way, which I love.
Ooh, you're so lucky.
And go to.
Try Twit. I don't know. Should I try live?
But live stream, is that what it is?
Live.twit.tv. I'll try it too. You do. I'll do twit.tv. You do live.twit.tv.
Okay.
But now we supposedly have HTML5 solutions.
I was gonna say it looks like it's. Let me see what it does.
Works on my twit.tv. Works on Metro, i.e., on my Acer. Because there, I see you, and I see me, and I see me showing me.
Okay. When you go to live.twit.tv, you briefly get that Flash icon, but then it does work. It works.
Yeah, it works. So good. So we are, I guess, whitelisted.
Okay. The emergency is over.
God bless America.
Well, actually, I think the way to say it is we're not blacklisted. Because everyone is whitelisted now, except that those... are on the list.
So they did flip it. So it was a white list. And it was a small list.
And do you think it's related to the size of the list? Like they got to a point where
it's too big.
The black list would just be a shorter list.
Well, guarantee you it's shorter.
Now, I think your theory's right, Paul. I think it's because more thing people were just like, not another thing that doesn't work on this.
Well, it must gall them a little bit because Apple did it.
I know.
And Apple sold iPads and iPhones.
But letter to customers, they talked about how Flash is the devil, something like that.
Yeah.
I have to say I love getting Flash on my iPad, on my Surface RT, though.
It's perfect. You should.
I love having it. Yeah. I know not everyone thinks this is a good move, but I love it.
Oh, I disagree. I think it is a good move. There, look, Flash is a mess. Flash is so... In fact, there were security flaws just fixed just the other day. But so is Adobe Reader, so is Java, so is the world.
Yeah, if you could just combine like Flash and Android into one package, that must be the most incredible, unreliable, insecure.
Well, you know what's funny is that even Adobe won't make Flash for mobile anymore. They stopped the making it for mobile.
Yeah.
But that was a performance issue too, that it was a poor experience because the hardware really wasn't up to it. I don't think you can say that about RT, but any of the RT devices. They can
You've been using it, so is it
Yeah, they could play Flash, right? No problem.
Yeah.
Wasn't great on the phone. Wasn't great on many. I think now Android phones with their quad and, yes, even 8-core processors probably have no trouble.
But now that it works on Windows RT, the hardware that's in a Windows phone device is essentially the same. And so the question naturally arises, are we going to get Flash on Windows Phone 8?
I asked. We have nothing to say about this at this time. Yeah. Just so you know, they're not commenting, but they're not saying no. Either.
Right. How about Xbox? The Xbox browser. Come on. Come on. No.
I don't know.
Just asking. Speaking of blacklists, what about the Blue Watch?
Nice segue there.
From black to blue, baby.
Yeah, not a whole ton new on Blue this week. Stephen Chapman, who's a really good Microsoft watcher and friend of ours, found a couple new Microsoft job posts and LinkedIn lists with people talking about Blue. The most interesting one he found this week was the Fresh Paint team at Microsoft saying that they're extending the product to take advantage of Blue. And everybody's like, what does that mean? Does that mean applications that already work on Windows 8 and Windows RT are not going to automatically work on Blue? No, that's not what I think it means. I think it just means we're making sure that an app like Fresh Paint, which is this oil painting app that Microsoft came out with for Windows 8, that it'll work really well on smaller screens, which is one of the things that Blue is optimized to work on. So that was the most interesting Blue thing this week. Nothing new in terms of builds or progress. I haven't heard any new rumors or updates on it. Have you, Paul? Anything new?
No. We got to get Steven on the show, though.
We do. Yeah. Yeah, we should.
And how long was Outlook.com down, just out of curiosity? It was like 3 days?
Well, if you're waiting to get your email, it was an eternity. It was over a day.
It was a long time.
Yeah, I didn't have too many. I didn't have issues. Like mine was never down, but I certainly. Neither. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Servers were overwhelmed. Was that it?
The server. This is what they said last night when they did a postmortem. The server got too hot. They really said that. I'm not kidding. That's what it said.
I know. Just open a door.
But this begs the question: the server. Really?
I know. Yeah.
For Hotmail and Outlook together?
I wouldn't read too much into that. Microsoft probably thinks about these things as the server might literally mean the data center.
Yeah.
You know?
The data, but that's an even bigger thing. Like the data center got too hot.
So, I mean, I don't know how deep we want to get into this, but apparently as part of the process of upgrading from Hotmail to Outlook.com, there's a firmware upgrade that occurs on whatever weird hardware they use. It has never caused any problems, but this time, for some reason, there was an error and it triggered this heat. And as part of the automatic, safety routines, it shut everything down. And then they had to bring people in. You know, then the people had to come running in. Right, it must have been like one of those Keystone Cop moments, where they actually had to have human intervention.
Is this what Outlook.com is supposed to look like? It's a nice new design.
Is that Netscape 4.1 or something?
So I'm thinking that there's still some issues because obviously the CSS did not come in from when I went to Outlook.com. So Bay 176, Microsoft Bay 176 is still too hot. Go in there and fix Bay 176. That's the machine. Still a little hot.
Still a little warm to the touch. Yeah. This wasn't the only outage, by the way. There were two other Hotmail and Outlook outages, two like back-to-back weeks before this one that they said the data center got too hot. And, I got to wonder, they're migrating tons and tons of people, like multiple millions of people are being moved over from Hotmail to Outlook right now. I know, because I'm hearing from like hundreds of them. I really sympathize with Paul yeah. now. God, my inbox every day is full of people freaking out who are on Hotmail for like their whole lives, suddenly being moved over by Microsoft to Outlook. And they're like, I can't find my contacts. They're gone. Microsoft took them. What is this conversation view thing? I hate it. How can I undo
this? This is like the second time this decade or whatever that these people have had to deal with this kind of thing. It's amazing. Like Hotmail users are so entrenched in their ways.
Right. They are.
Well, they wouldn't still be using Hotmail if they weren't.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's, you know what? It for me, it's a great reminder of what Microsoft deals with, because they have a billion users, right? Like we're always talking about, oh, the next generation, and we care about, right, you know, touch and speech. Right. Most people are just like, my Hotmail doesn't look like it looked like yesterday, and I'm scared.
What's going on? Yeah, I get those calls.
I'm
going
to write a stern
show.
Letter to the local newspaper because that's how people like that complain about things.
Oh, yeah. I get those calls on the radio show. You know, something's wrong with my AOL email.
Yeah.
Get that all the time.
Stop there. I think I found the problem.
Yeah. No, here's another one. My net zero dial-up isn't working anymore.
Yikes.
And I still get people asking about web TV. Why did my web TV stop working? Stopped working 3 years ago, lady.
You know, we're worried about getting phone updates on this phone, and there are people still using web TV.
But I expected about 4 or 5 years somebody to call up and say, you know, my Microsoft Messenger doesn't work anymore.
Oh,
that'll be me. I'll be angry still about that one.
Yep.
I don't know when it stopped, but I haven't received a message since 2013.
I'm worried that my daughter might be dead.
I hope she's okay.
Can you see if you can get her on Messenger?
Exactly. Here's her handle. LonelyGirl69. Can you check? Because
wait, that's my sister.
I just, we're joking about this, but I really think Microsoft needs to do some things like put up some more videos for these people so that they're not flipping out. I don't want them all in my inbox every day.
They need to get Mike Rowe in there and make some videos.
The help stuff, obviously, is one thing. The email that always amuses me is it'll be someone who is just very unhappy with this change, like you said. And they'll write me and they'll say, can you explain to me why Microsoft decided to do this to me? You know, that kind of thing. And, you know, it's like looking into the mind of Microsoft. You know, like, why did they want to hurt you? It's kind of hard to say.
Well, I just, you know, say the guy who wrote it left.
Yeah.
And they have a new guy, and he's got a better way.
I was on the last free BSD server of Hotmail, and I really liked the old interface. Sorry. It's not 1999 anymore. I don't know what to tell you.
This is all new. We've never dealt with this because it's still relatively new, the computer industry. But now it's getting old enough that this kind of stuff is happening more often. And we have to get used to that. By the way, how's calendar integration going? It's good. It's good, right?
Proceeding exactly as it was.
No one knows. We just don't know.
I just want to stress that this is a CSS change would be enough. That is all they have to do.
Hey, somebody should just volunteer the CSS file. Maybe.
I never thought we'd be having these conversations. I really didn't.
No. No, neither did I. Anything else you want to talk about before? We could do... Well, no, let's not. I was going to say a listener Q&A, which we still... You know, haven't done in ages. Listeners, do you have any questions at all for Paul and Mary Jo? Something quick. Something fast. Now, it takes a while because there's a little lag time. How much is... Jimmy Fallon wants to know what's 2+2. Okay. What do you think about Google Reader shutting down? Isn't that an opportunity for Microsoft now?
This one impacts me. Greatly.
Me too. Every tech journalist used this.
Yep. I know. So I've looked at all the available. People are going to make all these recommendations. I'm not interested.
It's too pretty for you?
No, that's not the problem. It needs to work on everything that I use.
Yeah,
you know, one of the nice things about Google Reader is I can pop it on my phone and look at it. Beautiful mobile interface.
Ain't gonna happen.
I know. It's very upsetting. And no, this is not an opportunity for Microsoft to do it. Why would they put support for RSS and Outlook.com?
No, I mean, you're right.
In the real world,
it's
who cares?
It's already in Outlook, though.
No, Outlook.com.
No, yeah, but if it's in Outlook.
You're right.
You could use Outlook.
Outlook, the Outlook.
Export your OPML from your Google Reader.
That'd be cool. I would like it in Outlook.com.
Oh, no, I would love it, too. I'm just saying there's no way they're going to do that.
No?
Yeah. No. What's the business model? I mean, it's...
Yeah, no. And that's why Google shut it down.
Their next $1 business? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
True.
But it's funny because there's a disproportionate number of tech journalists that use this thing.
Right.
Apparently nobody in the real world did, but we all do because what we have to do is scan news feeds.
I mean, is there one employee at Google taking care of this thing? The last time they had a blog post was in 2011. Like, why not just leave it up?
Yeah. Well, it does use a lot of server resources.
I guess. I don't know.
Dave Weiner said something interesting. He's a guy who wrote RSS, was an early proponent of this. He said, you know, I understand it because the mailbox model of RSS, you know, here's your inbox, here's all the articles you haven't read, has really given way to this idea of a river of news like Twitter, where there's just news flowing by.
You're talking about like a marketplace of actual users. Yeah, sure it has. But that doesn't mean that this model doesn't make sense for some things. I find it to be very valuable. I would like it to stay. I don't.
There'll be a solution because too many of us influencers, and I use that word lightly.
Influentially.
use it.
Yes.
Everybody here uses it.
Have either of you used NewsBlur? That's the one I see everybody talking about today.
NewsBlur.
I haven't tried it. But
one of the problems is a lot of these clients use Reader as their back end. Somebody's going to have to provide the back end services for this stuff.
Right.
I mean, you can get your... subscriptions downloaded from Reader as an OPML.
Because email in Outlook.com would be okay. Not ideal.
Apple used to do it in Apple Mail and Safari, and and they took it out.
Because nobody uses it. Statistically, right?
Somebody said Dig is going to, the people who bought Dig, which I think is Newsly, can't remember what it was, but they're going to make one. So that's a possibility. I think it's an opportunity. I think there's a market opportunity. Some smaller company come along and say, "Okay,
there are solutions like Flipboard that make a lot of sense for consumers, but that's not how I want to see this stuff. I just want the text."
It's actually how I've basically been doing it for a long time now. Is using Flipboard.
Yeah. Not for me.
Not for Paulie. No siree, Bob Height. Let's see. What else? Chat room, any other questions, any other things you'd like to know? Have you used Kinect with Windows 8? Asks Husky Geek.
I don't remember. I used Kinect with Windows. It's just a developer product at this point, but I don't remember if it was Windows 7 or Windows 8. One of the news things that's occurring as we do this is that the Windows Phone 7.8 update is occurring again.
Yeah.
They've made some kind of a fix to that. So they had paused that update because of problems with live tiles. That's been fixed. Right. So that's happening.
You should be getting that update now.
Well, no, this is Windows Phone, Leo, so you won't be getting that update now, but you'll get it eventually.
But I have the new BlackBerry. Will it come for me? When is, I like this one from Web 2449, when is VBA coming to Windows RT?
Coming real soon now.
Let me introduce you to my new web-based friends.
No point in asking questions like, why did they kill XNA either?
Right.
There is no why.
Silverlight.
They hate users, that's why.
Woo-hoo. Yeah.
Yeah, it was too lightweight and excellent.
Yeah.
That's why.
And they want to know if either of you contributed to the Laura Mars Kickstarter project.
No.
That's bizarre. Who knew there were that many Laura Mars fans?
It is bizarre. For some reason, this is getting a big news push. This is not the first time a movie has been made with Kickstarter funds. In fact, there was an amazing
Academy
story
Award
in the New York
winner.
Times a few months ago about a crazy movie with Lindsay Lohan and... that was actually Kickstarter funds. I'm serious. You got to look this thing up. It's a crazy, crazy sounding movie.
Who would give money to Kickstarter to make a movie with Lindsay Lohan?
Who wouldn't? That's nuts. It's so nuts it could work.
It might just work. Let's just check in with the Laura Mars Kickstarter project and see. Let's get the tote board up and see how much we've raised. We're trying to get $2 million to make a movie.
$2,800.
And we now have 45,937 backers with a total pledged amount of $2.76 million. We've made our goal, ladies and gentlemen.
That is insane.
It is.
Doing it for the kids.
Now, if you...
I'm sorry, not Laura Mars. Laura Mars was the movie with Faye Dunaway. It's Veronica... It's
the Eyes of Laura Mars.
The Eyes of Laura Mars. I confuse right. The Mars girls. It's Veronica Mars.
Veronica Mars. Yeah.
Does she have eyes that can see things, or is that not?
I don't think they're related.
No. Nah. So I apologize. That was a Freudian slip, wasn't it? I that's the Mars.
The success of this kind of thing is going to trigger a lot of Kickstarter craziness, I bet.
I've stopped giving money to Kickstarter projects because almost uniformly everything I've received from Kickstarter either has not come or has come and has been crap.
Right.
So, but I guess what could go wrong with a movie? Well, I could tell you what could go wrong with a movie.
Wrong with a movie.
Yeah. I mean, that's not enough to make a movie. So some studio is going to come along.
Right.
You're not going to get any money from ticket sales. Mm. And I guess if you really wanted to see it. Now, if this goes, which it did, I'm sure we're going to see a Firefly Kickstarter, right? What other crappy TV shows would you like to bring back?
Wow.
Sky's the limit. All righty. Let's take a break. Come back with your pick, tip, beer, and product name of the week. X-Files. Why am I so negative, asked Gabzilla? Because life is tough. The world sucks.
Right.
And people are mean. And I can't help that. So I'm just saying it as it is.
They're bastard-covered bastards.
And I did like Firefly, actually. But I don't... They made a movie... Remember, they did the series, which is great. We have that. They made a movie. Okay. And I think
they made a second movie that was actually pretty terrible.
I think we're done. I mean, sometimes things are done.
Oh, sorry, you're talking about
Firefly, not Veronica Mars or Laura Mars.
X-Files.
I think we should make a Manimal movie, somebody says. It is Pi Day. Are you having pie, gentlemen and lady? A Silver Spoons reunion with Ricky Schroeder. Yikes. See, the ideas just come fast and furious from that chat room. Moonlighting the later years. I want to see Bruce and Sybil do it.
What?
That's what I...
Okay. All right.
Sybil Shepherd, right, was the woman?
Yeah, and
she
Bruce
just
Willis.
Appear in the next Die Hard movie. It could be one of those weird little non sequitur things right in the middle.
And he could say, I feel a strange attraction to you. I wonder what it is.
And then he just keeps going.
Oh, I know. Bruce and Sybil and Sam and Diane. We could make a new...
Jeez. In the retirement home?
Hey, come here, you cutie. It's time for a word from Squarespace. They're wondering why they bought ad time at this very moment. Actually, Squarespace. Three's Company. I like that idea. Three's Company. They say that if we did a movie with Bruce and Sybil, it should be called Died Hard. That's good.
That's just awesome.
I bet you could raise $2 million on Kickstarter for that. And here's the beauty of it. You don't ever have to do it. Make the movie. Just take the money. It's a great deal. You can't lose. You just say, okay, we're in development. And then you go to Mexico.
Died Hard.
Died, D-Y-E-D, Died Hard.
Yeah, good name for an autobiography.
Moonlit. This show brought to you by Squarespace.com, a fabulous choice if you want to put together a website. I know Paul wishes, actually Paul has used it. Paul's using it for his current book project, which is called, I never remember the name of this.
WindowsPhoneBook.com.
WindowsPhoneBook.com. Actually, it's really important that you say that with the right cadence. Not WindowsPhoneBook.com.
Yeah,
WindowsPhoneBook.com.
Right. That's true.
Cadence is everything. So, Paul, why'd you choose Squarespace? Maybe because it was easy, beautiful.
Because you talk about it so much and you made me mad.
I sold you on it. I sold you on it.
Because I was using a terrible CMS at the time.
Yeah. Well, they've improved the Supersite CMS, right?
Oh, yeah. No,
it's no longer written in Delphi.
I was in hell for 3 years, Leo.
I know. I remember you. I felt your pain. Squarespace is the secret behind exceptional websites like Paul's. Well, he didn't exactly do a beautiful design.
And I was going to say, that was it is certainly a website. I think we could give it that
but
much.
That's the beauty of it. And it never goes down. You never. It's reliable. It's easy to post to. You can use the apps, or they have a great iPad and iPhone app. But here's a new feature, and you might want to be checking this out, Paul. You can sell goods now because they've added commerce.
So I'm going to sell a book.
You could sell digital copies of that book. You could sell print copies of that book. They could do unlimited physical products, unlimited digital products. They'll set you up with a merchant account. They even calculate automatically shipping, tax. You could do coupons. They track inventory. You could have a mobile store. This is amazing. Squarespace.com. We've talked about it before. It's the best hosting plus the best content management system. Now they've added commerce. And look at this. The price is right. The basic plan is $8 a month when you buy an annual plan. You can get the unlimited plan for the unheard of $16 a month when billed annually. That includes unlimited pages, galleries, blogs, unlimited bandwidth. You could get really popular. It never get a bandwidth bill. Unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. When you buy the annual plan, you get the custom domain name, you know, windowsphonebook.com, for instance. And they'll hook it up for you. You want to go a little step further, do some e-commerce? For $24 a month, you get everything in the unlimited plan and unlimited physical and digital products. You could sell CDs or MP3s, e-books or hardcovers. Squarespace Commerce. It's here for $24 a month billed annually. $30
MacGyver.
A month. It is MacGyver. No, you want to remake MacGyver.
I'm just blurting stuff out like an old person.
Okay, good.
I want chocolate.
MacGyver. I remember him. That was a good show. I love that show. Squarespace.com. Here's what you do. You go there right now. You could try it for free. You don't need a credit card. You get 2 weeks free of everything. But if you decide to buy, make sure you use Windows 3 as the offer code. And you get 10% off your first purchase with a new account. I think you're going to love it. Squarespace.com. They don't take a cut of
your
sales.
I can see the end coming, Leo. I can see that light at the end of the tunnel.
MacGyver!
Just like the day that Paul torpedoed an ad.
Matlock! Yes. I want Matlock!
Quincy.
What is Tom Selleck doing these days?
He's doing a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah, he's busy. He's busy. Our tip of the week, make Windows 8 work the way you want to. How, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, we already talked about this on the earlier in the show, but through those...
Starduck has a lot of solutions, actually.
Starduck, that's kind of the big thing. Yeah. The one question I actually do get from people that I don't have a good answer for is some people want to bring back the arrow effect to the Windows desktop.
No,
and I'm not actually aware of a utility for that, although...
I think Starduck has one. I think you can with one of the Starduck solutions.
Oh, do they really?
Okay. I swear to God. We're basically
living in a Starduck lifestyle here is what I'm hearing. But I prefer the Windows 8 look on the desktop.
It's a Starduck world.
Anyway, I wrote an article about this stuff.
Of course you did. Because Paul can't see something without saying, I'm going to write an article about that.
I'm going to write something about that.
I'm going to write about MacGyver.
I'm going to write a Magnum PI movie script.
Hey, there's a good idea. How about your software pick of the... Oh, I got to download it right now. I keep forgetting.
Oh,
Twitter is here.
Twitter for Windows 8.
After I paid, what was it, $10 for Tweetro? Or...
Yikes.
What was it that you told me to buy?
Yeah.
Oh, whoa.
Metro Twit? You told me to buy Metro Twit, and I did.
Oh, MetroTwit's great.
But it was $10, and now I can get the free. Well, is this better than new Twitter? Is it free?
It's free. It's kind of the quintessential Metro app in that it has all of the good and bad stuff about Metro apps. You know, so Twitter seems to be in love with like this one-column view, whereas a lot of Twitter third-party solutions have multi-column views. But the one nice thing about this app, I have to say, it looks a lot like the Windows Phone app, which I like. It's... Really works well in snap mode. And so if you want to snap Twitter onto the side, and that's sort of the way I think a lot of
people... That's key. Oh, yeah. That's absolutely key.
It works really well like that. So it's a click app.
Is this it? The blue one?
Yep. Yeah.
it's
got a bird.
Yeah, it's got a bird installed. There's something right under it called Twitter Pro, but that's not from Twitter. This is the official Twitter app.
Yeah, this is the official. It just came out yesterday.
Yeah. I'm so excited.
It's a good one. It's nice.
Twitter was installed. Oh, this is very exciting. Oh, look, I get the birdie and everything. Birdie. authorize app. It even remembers my login, so I don't need to re-log in.
Yeah, it must tie into the Internet Explorer save password thing.
Yeah, yeah, cool. And so, and now I can swipe this over to the edge and, whoops.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, Popeye. Where do I swipe, from the left or the right?
I would pull it down from the top.
Okay, and then pull it down from the top and then move it over?
And then move it over, yeah. It's you got to start the pull not on this on the screen, not above the screen.
Oh, on the screen, but not above
near
it.
The top. Near, right near the top. You got to. So it's kind
so
of
it's
a tap,
out.
It's kind of a tap and hold nothing.
There, I got it. Release to refresh. No, that's not what I want. I'm sure I'll figure it out. Go on with the next.
I'm done. Mary Jo's up. So.
Hi, Mary Jo.
He's our problem now, Mary Jo.
I feel you shouldn't. An operating system shouldn't make you feel.
This is the moment when the parents realize maybe we don't have a little PhD on our hands.
system should not make you feel disabled in some way, like some sort of developmental issues going on here.
That is a beautiful synopsis of Windows 8. Right there. Yep.
I can't figure it out, Paul, but I'm excited about this new Matlock show.
Remember that you can also use the mouse to do this. You could use the little mouse cursor, and it turns into a hamburger helper hand, and you can pull it down. And
a hamburger helper hand.
It does. I promise you it does.
No, it's not. Oh, there it is. But it's very, that's a small target. Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, baby. Yeah, baby. Yay! It worked. This is the nice thing about Windows 8. You feel like such a success when you get it to do it.
It's the struggle that defines us, Leo.
Yeah, the powerful. So now I have this. This is good. This is exactly how it should be.
Yeah, it's nice.
I don't know what this thing is, but
you can do anything you want. So hit the start button. And then hit like alt start button.
Open OneNote because that's something. Hey, now they're together at last. Two great tastes in one screen. This is, you know, you could almost do this like have like different two different windows on the screen, and you could go back. Wouldn't that be cool?
Maybe in version 9, Leo.
Oh, I got another idea. I could take data from one screen and put it in the other screen. We could call it like, I don't know. We could cut it and paste.
Olay or DDE for you old timers.
DDE. I remember that.
Win16, it's the future.
Mary Jo Foley, can you give me an enterprise pick of the week? It's actually aptly named. It's time for a roll-up. Is it a fruit roll-up, Mary Jo?
It is not a fruit.
Matlock.
MacGyver.
Leo MacGyver. It is not.
It's a new pool game Paul and I have invented. We'll sit in the pool. We won't swim because that's dangerous. You could have a heart attack. And you shout MacGyver, and I'll shout Matlock.
There you go.
What about it, Paul? It'd be great.
Paul's crying. No. Paul's crying.
I'm sorry.
What is this? The Windows 7 hotfix roll up?
Yeah, enterprise pick of the week. Woohoo. The roll-up.
His camera is actually jiggling. His camera is actually jiggling. Matlock! Matlock! If your head's not underwater, Paul, you have to say MacGyver.
Okay.
I can't breathe now.
Go ahead, Mary Jo. I'll just mute his microphone.
Mute him.
Matlock!
He's underwater.
He's just, you know what? He's punchy. He's been in Redmond for 2 days.
That explains
it. I'm okay.
Okay. Go ahead, Mary Jo. We've composed ourselves.
Let's talk about the slow boot, slow login hotfix.
What?
Yeah. So this is a roll up that came out on Patch Tuesday this week. It was kind of a hidden one because it's not a security one. But what it is it's almost like a service pack, even though they don't want to call it a service pack. It's 90 hotfixes in this one roll up.
Whoa.
And it's huge. meant to improve performance and stability of Windows 7 Service Pack 1 and Windows Server 2008 R2 machines.
So they've never done a Service Pack 2.
No.
For 7.
I don't think they are going to, although they've never actually said that.
But this is like a Service Pack 2 in a way, right? Yeah.
It is. So our good friends on the Ask Premier Field Engineering Platforms blog, who are loyal Windows Weekly listeners, alerted me to this hotfix and said, hey, I bet your listeners are going to love this one. And I bet they are too. So you might want to go get it.
Yeah.
Is it not
automatic?
I think it will be pushed to you ultimately. But I also included in my story about it, I included a download link in case you don't get it and you want it.
Excellent. All about Microsoft.com, kids.
That's right.
Codename of the week.
Codename of the week is Gemini. A new one for us here on the show. Gemini is a coming update. Paul is still crying. To Dynamic CRM. This is kind of interesting. Dynamic CRM team is still doing a whole ton of updates with code names. Don't make me look at him anymore.
Bad luck!
I need to not look over there. Okay. Gemini is the next update to CRM, Microsoft Dynamics CRM. It's Microsoft bought this company called Marketing Pilot last year, which is a marketing automation company. And the Gemini update, according to various people who've posted about this code name, which Microsoft still is not officially acknowledging at this point, say that this is how you're going to get the Marketing Pilot functionality, all this marketing automation integration built more tightly connected with your CRM product. Next week is Microsoft Convergence, which is the big CRM show.
Paul's server is overheating. I think somebody better pour a bucket of water on him or something. All right, chat room, everybody, all together, shout Matlock. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Matlock!
I'm really sorry.
Nice.
Sorry, Mary Jo.
You just don't care about Dynamic CRM, Paul.
No, we don't. I'm sorry. No. Did I say that? Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
No, you guys care. You're going to care next week. You're going to hear this a lot next week when Microsoft has their big show in New Orleans next week all about CRM. You're going to read a lot of CRM news. So I bet next week they're going to announce this. That's just a guess on my part.
Mary Jo, I'm sorry. The show is off the track. It's
the
not,
show is off. Paul's like in over. Tears.
It's over. Why don't you give us a beer pick of the week?
I will.
Maybe and we'll all feel much better.
Okay. So everybody knows St. Patrick's Day is coming up this week.
You're not going to pick green beer, please.
No, not green beer and not Guinness either because that's just too common. So I picked another Irish beer called the Porterhouse Oyster Stout from Porterhouse Brewing in Ireland. And you can get this in the U.S. I've seen it. I've even had a couple pints here myself in New York. And what's really cool about this beer is it's a stout brewed with oysters. Like they actually throw oysters in. Yeah.
Oh, and it tastes that's disgusting. Delicious.
No, that sounds great.
It's fantastic.
Oysters,
it's
like the seafood?
Yeah, like the seafood. They put oysters in the boil. And yeah, it gives it this nice, sweet, kind of delicate flavor. So if you're looking for kind of something a little different for St. Patrick's Day and you want to drink an Irish stout, I'd say try to find this Porterhouse Oyster Stout.
I mean, it's good for a story. You know they put oysters in this.
It's awesome.
I could see plunking an oyster in a beer, like kind of a chaser thing.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, they brew it with the oyster. Some people brew Does with it oyster not, shells.
It doesn't taste fishy?
No, it tastes a little salty in a nice way.
Oh, well, I like oysters. It's not that I don't like oysters. I just never thought of brewing beer with it.
I bet you'd like this one, Leo. You should look for it.
I'm getting it. I'm going to drink it for St. Paddy's Day. In fact, Datalore, who's in Ireland, says, next time you're over here, I'll bring you to the Porterhouse, Leo. Yep. You could have some beer yourself. You can watch them shuck the oysters. Throw them in there. Yeah.
That'd be cool.
So what are you going to do for St. Patrick's Day, Mary Jo? Are you it's Sunday?
I don't know. Tough call there.
You have your own, you know, local, right?
I have my
you
own go beer. To. I have my own beer here as well.
You don't even have to go out the door.
I don't.
Yeah. But you have a local that you go to, a pub, a little place you like
I
to
do.
Frequent.
My local, yep. Rattle and Hum for anyone who comes to visit New York.
Named after the U2.
Indeed.
Which is Irish, an Irish band. So I would think Rattle and Hum would probably do a pretty good St. Patrick's Day.
They do, indeed.
All right. And Paul, you're grounded.
He's out of here. He's grounded.
You're grounded.
Sorry. I have no explanation for what just happened. But I am sorry.
I know what happened. I know what happened. Just a good thing I'm sitting on a ball. That's all I can say. We do this show every Thursday, around about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. You can tune in live and join the crowd shouting at Paul. That's fun. We all shouted Matlock.
Oh, boy.
But if you can't watch live on demand, audio and video available after the fact, twit.tv/windows or wherever better podcasts are storehoused and served up fresh and delicious. Thanks, Paul. Paul Thurrott is at All About, or, I'm sorry, Paul's at Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. He's also the author, and I bought it, by the way, Paul, and I have it, Windows 8 Secrets. I needed it for this. So thank you. Great book. It's funny. It's so thin compared to the earlier tomes.
Yeah, it's just because it's all new stuff only.
Ah, so fortunately, I have Windows 7 Secrets.
We have washed our hands of the past.
So I can refer back to Windows 7 Secrets for stuff, older stuff. All right, good. Mary Jo Foley writes at allaboutmicrosoft.com and brews beer, which she does not sell, so don't ask her. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Oh, it's a fun show.
I am.
Matlock. Oh, boy.
I'm glad you got that out of you there.
I don't know what.
You can't do that on a plane. There. They won't. They'll take you off.
Oh, my God.
They'll be like, who is this guy?
You know what's funny, Paul? Is your camera was jiggling because the laptop was just going. That's great. I love it.
That's great.
It was great.
I'll be okay. Yeah.